Hello and welcome back to Dukebox Radio. I'm Lucas Ferguson, the station manager, and I'm delighted to be joined at this time as part of the Hidden Figures event by Ned, the Deputy Head of College.
Hello. Well, incoming Deputy Head of College.
Well, incoming Deputy Head of College. How are you doing?
I'm really, really good. It's a really good Monday morning, to be honest with you. I'm really excited for half term. But other than that, just trying to survive the week. What about you?
I'm doing pretty good. Most people don't normally ask me that during an interview. How are you doing? Oh, well.
Good question. No, I think it's quite a hard question to answer because maybe people ask you, how are you doing? It's like, well, there's a lot of things I could tell you.
I instantly go to that, you know, the meme with the slow piano music. You try and someone tries to tell you how you are and you say you're fine, but you're not fine.
Yes.
Anyway, that was the first tangent of what I hope won't be many, because we are here to talk about yourself and about diversity and inclusion and about Hidden Figures. So, first of all, how did you end up getting involved in the diversity and inclusion work at the college?
It was quite random, to be honest with you. Obviously, there's kind of a massive gap between fifth form and then lower sixth because of COVID and all that, so it was quite a mess. But somewhere in the middle of that, my dad died, and then I ended up coming out in the summer of 2020. And I don't know, amidst the whole Black Lives Matter movement and kind of a climate where everyone was quite conscious of diversity and social issues, somehow that just struck a chord with me, and I ended up coming back to college. And I remember there was this email about lower sixth representative committees. So there was diversity, inclusion, co-curricular, mental health, that kind of thing. And it just piqued my interest because that was the kind of area which I had become quite passionate about over the past year. And I got it. I was really surprised. I really didn't expect to. And then we just, me and the committee, so me, Shah, and Anjali started having these weekly meetings with people. And they were just great because it would be quite a small group usually of people coming together and just talking about things that they were passionate about. So things that can be improved just in general life to do with like racism or sexism or homophobia or whatever it is. And it was just really great to have a group of like-minded people. But yeah, it was quite a random thing, to be honest with you. I couldn't pinpoint a specific moment or time where I became interested in diversity and inclusion, but I think it was mainly just kind of a passion for justice and making things be right and fair that made me want to do it, to be honest.
And as part of that, now this Hidden Figures event has been birthed. How did that come about?
To be honest, it was kind of a similar thing, which I didn't have much to do with, to be honest. It was almost Gitalan, really. She was the absolute like fire starter in coming up with the idea, which I thought was brilliant. And she got in touch with me and just kind of, yeah, asked if I wanted to help her, and probably haven't been that much help really, but she's been kind of the main brains in coming up with it. But it's brilliant. So it's this project basically that is just trying to celebrate the achievements of people of color, or essentially people who aren't white, who've done things and haven't been recognized for it, whether that's because their achievements have been suppressed and they haven't been like celebrated consciously, or whether they had just have been kind of missed out of the history books or whatever. But it's been a really, really fun project that's also been really important, because the whole aim of it is that you're trying to raise up these people who haven't been celebrated before. And then people kind of ask, like, what's the point in doing that? But firstly, I think it kind of shows how unnatural the previous canon of people that we've celebrated was before. So I don't know, you think of Einstein or whatever.
No, I completely get you with that, because I come from a classical music background, and so much of that comes from sort of the white male composer. Yeah. I completely understand you on that front.
Completely, and it's kind of denaturalizing that, and we kind of have been brought up, or me as like a white guy has been thought that that's normal. I've been like, oh, well, that's just like history, isn't it? But no, it's not really. So we're showing, no, that's not really how it is. There's been some active, horrible power dynamics at play that have prevented other people from being included in that main channel of people that are recognized for doing amazing things. And it kind of further politicizes the issue of that and makes it something that people need to focus on, something people need to focus on actually changing, so rewriting people back into history. And I think that, like, beyond that, that's about all well and good, but it doesn't make a difference if we're rewriting people back into history but not celebrating people in the present. So something that people can actually do every day to make sure that this process doesn't keep repeating is celebrating non-white people who've achieving things, which is literally everywhere, in the present day, so that in the end those people are canonized as well, and then we don't have to go back in 200 years and try and get people from 2021 who've done great stuff to be recognized.
So this podcast is going up on Thursday, the day after the actual Hidden Figures event. So by that point on Dukebox, we'll have had the Edgy Spots Post-Colonialism podcast. We'll have had the Hidden Figures Omnibus and, of course, the live stream from the Hidden Figures event. That's just the stuff that's been sort of going on in collaboration with Dukebox. My understanding is that this is actually a really sort of wide-ranging project. So what's been going on around the campus?
Well, in terms of broad D&I, Hidden Figures is kind of one separate thing, and it's kind of not really part of the main college's drive. It's just been, it's almost an independent project initiated by Miss Guitelin, bless her, amazing. But yeah, the main college work essentially at the moment is with Mr. Miller, who's an external consultant who's come in, and he's basically surveying the college's diversity work based on the 2010 Equality Act, which is, like, I think there's 9, 10, I can't remember, protected characteristics of people. But he's just making sure that the college is adhering to these, so they're like faith, race, gender reassignment, sexual orientation, all of these kind of things. And Hidden Figures kind of fits in currently because for the next 6 months, or we're in the 6 month period, that he's going to be focusing on race as his, like, core issue that he's going to improve or attempting to improve or survey at the college. So far we had, I don't know if you remember, in assembly there was a Q&A with him and three of the prefects, and then Sade and Nicole, who were part of the outgoing upper sect, who have been really central parts of pushing D&I at the college, especially in terms of race. But yeah, he's kind of surveying things and seeing especially what the weaknesses are at Wellington, but what can be improved. And I think he's trying to take an approach that's quite, like, based in curriculum, but also covers, like, Wellington culture as well. But yeah, on that topic of Wellington culture, I think that's kind of one of the aims of D&I from the student-led initiatives at the moment, is trying to make Wellington like a social space where diversity is present. And we try to kind of do this. What our emphasis is kind of on promoting individuality, because we feel that if we come from a culture where everything or everyone is mutually respecting of other people, then kind of diversity just emerges naturally, rather than trying to, not force it, that's not the right word, but it becomes a more organic thing. And also Wellington College in the process would just be a much nicer place if everyone's respectful.
And of course, you know, we live in an age where we can't escape the influence of COVID on, well, pretty much every aspect of our lives. Yes. I'm sure it's been quite a large influence in how you've had to tackle things for this event as well.
Definitely. It's been a bit annoying, I think, because some of the project has overlapped with various lockdowns and things that have kind of blurred into my memory that I've kind of forgotten about, but yeah, the kind of blotted out times. Yeah, but it's meant that we've had a bit of difficulty in kind of the logistical workings of the event. So if I explain a bit about it, basically, first launched a competition where we were asking people to make a short video celebrating a certain hidden figure for something specific. But we wanted people to really kind of dive in deep and find people that you didn't know about. So we love the Martin Luther Kings and the Rosa Parks, but could you find someone that we'd never heard their name before, that would be just a really interesting and exciting thing for people to hear about? It ended up that the people that we found out about weren't that obscure, but it's really great to have people engaging in it at all, to be honest, and that's the important thing. But yeah, so we asked people to kind of make these films about a hidden figure who they had found, but of course, it's hard to make a film. So a lot of the entries have kind of ended up being like PowerPoints, and then you can kind of put a speaker on behind it, so you speak into this thing and it records you, and then it plays over the PowerPoint. And I've done one as well on Balthazar, who is one of the three, like the three kings in the Jesus story. I don't know, and how he's represented in art, but we've had some really interesting ones. So one group has done one on Mammy Phillips, and then another on Margaret Busby, who's this publisher who's still alive today, which is really cool. And as I said before, kind of exemplifies that focus on getting people who are actually here today into the like sphere of respect. Yeah, but I'm really excited to see how everyone reacts to it on Wednesday.
It'll be exciting, yeah. So obviously, you know, Hidden Figures is a great event, and I'm sure it will be, and I hope it will be a very impactful event for a lot of people around the college. How do you think it relates to sort of the day-to-day aspect of the college?
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think it relates to the day-to-day aspect of the college by just making it a place. By having events like that, you make it a place where diversity and inclusion, race, sexuality, gender is something that's on the forefront of people's minds. And I think that's actually one of the most kind of vehement drivers behind people actually getting conscious about issues that affect people, really. And I think that's why it's kind of relevant, because I think a lot of the issues that we have at the college in terms of like lack of diversity or uninclusive attitudes are kind of on a more base level. It's not people outrightly calling people slurs or anything, to be honest, I wouldn't say, or from my experience. It's more ignorance and not necessarily intransigence, to be honest. So it's just people not really being aware of issues. And I think that's because we all come from a very privileged background. I know we say it a lot, but it's true. So I think a lot of people almost feel as if these problems don't affect them and that therefore they're not an issue, but that's not really the case, because I'm sure we all have friends who are affected by, I don't know, homophobia or sexism, and like we go to a co-ed school, so of course we all have friends who are affected by sexism. But yeah, it Hidden Figures plays a role in promoting those conversations. And at the end of the actual event, we're having a panel discussion with the fellow, like the lower sixth diversity and inclusion committee chairs, so Shah and Anjali, amazing people. Yeah, and that's kind of it, promoting conversation kind of thing.
And you touched on it briefly during your answer there. Obviously, this is a place of, you know, immense privilege for a lot of people. How do you think the college is faring at the moment with respect to diversity and inclusion? What are the areas where you think it's doing really well, and do you think there are areas where it can be improved upon?
Definitely. I think it is doing well in the sense that I had never felt before sixth form, I wouldn't say, that there was kind of any recognition of it that much. And I suppose that it might be just because of the climate that we're in, and like the college has to be, and I think everyone and businesses and wherever, like, and people just have a responsibility to respond to the environment which you're in. So responding to Black Lives Matter, or responding to like Everyone's Invited and kind of the Sarah Everard murder and kind of the women's movement and all these sorts of things. So how is Wellington doing? I think it's responding suitably and making the right steps. However, obviously, like there's always work to be done, but there is always work to be done. But the only issue is, I feel that there is almost an element that the college can't do as much as it would like to because of the nature of just kids. Like, it's so hard being 13, 14, 15, and you're just trying to like navigate your life and like survive, basically. So I guess that things like diversity and inclusion and social justice projects aren't necessarily on your radar as much as they might be when you're older. But I always think that the best thing that Wellington can do for creating like a diverse atmosphere and an inclusive atmosphere is just, it's like easier said than done, but really, really promoting like, I call it courageous individuality in like as young as possible. And it's so cringe because you always see it on TV shows and stuff where they're like, be yourself and do that and like don't be afraid to, yeah, that kind of thing. But then it kind of goes over your head because it just feels a bit cringy and like those maxims that people don't really listen to. But it's kind of genuinely a really, really important message. And I don't really know how you drill it into people enough.
Well, I suppose it comes back to what you're saying about, you know, the more that these events happen, the more natural the conversations about it can become, the more easily you can start thinking about it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It's just that having it at the front of your mind is the most important thing. And I think, obviously, that's when the most change comes about, really, isn't it? If it's something that you're consciously thinking about. And as well, having all the conversations about it and being within a climate that it's a focus also makes you really conscious of like the problems in your environment. So I feel like I only came to life about a year ago or something like that, year and a half ago, and started seeing blatant issues in just like life and Wellington College in terms of D&I. I think especially in terms of gender issues and just like tiny things with, I don't know, like just, or maybe not, they're not really tiny, but they're things that you wouldn't notice otherwise. So I don't know, just like boys describing girls when girls aren't around and it's kind of gross and a bit misogynistic kind of thing, even if it doesn't immediately appear to be. I don't know, but yeah.
No, it is something that you notice. It brings to mind something that I've sort of been thinking about quite a lot lately, because I've had a couple of my quite close friends coming out as either transgender or non-binary or different gender orientations. And, you know, once that happens quite close to home for you, you really do start to think about it in a very different way. You hear all of these things that before you've completely just sort of, you've almost blanked out, and you start thinking, oh, actually, I feel really uncomfortable hearing that now, because that's talking about someone that I know really well.
Yeah, that's my friend. That's not fair. That's not true kind of thing. Yeah. That's that like twinge of justice, isn't it? It's like, no, that's not right. You cannot say that. That's not true. No, completely. And especially those specific, like gender issues. I think that's a really interesting one. We had this email the other day about, perhaps this wasn't something that we have, it's something on the agenda that we are thinking about. But we had an email that at lots of businesses, people are being made to, like, that sounds bad, not being made, but people are starting to put their pronouns as in like she, her, he, him, she, they, whatever it is.
And of course that's recently happened on Instagram as well.
Yeah, exactly.
You can put your pronouns in.
Exactly. And it's like the smallest things can actually make the biggest difference. And I was talking to my friends about putting that in school, and we were all just saying, you know what, why the hell not? Because it's so simple. And I think it would be quite interesting to see how people would react, because if people were resistant to it, then that would tell us quite a lot about what we needed to do to change. But I just think that little things like that are quite cool. But yeah, you're right. When it is close to home, it matters so much more. And that's, I think, one of the biggest problems in coming from this place of like bubble of immense privilege, because people just don't think this stuff applies to them. And on like, often it doesn't immediately seem to, because if you're a straight white guy who's rich, probably at the school, like you're not gonna face racism, or you're not gonna face homophobia or sexism or whatever. And you might not outrightly think that applies to you, but it actually does when you think about it a bit more, because it comes into also conversations about mental health. But I remember that one of the biggest things I struggled with was coming out was like, I didn't care about being gay. I hate the label thing, but it's kind of it feels a bit necessary. I had no problem with like being gay, but it was the whole masculinity thing, because I thought that immediately if I came out that I just transition into James Charles or something. And obviously that's not the case. It's like, doesn't actually change you at all. But it was, I was kind of conditioned by stereotypes that made me think that gay meant feminine, but that's not true. And that's why I think that these issues can actually be seen so much to matter to people. So like straight white guys who don't necessarily think that things apply to them, because I don't know, I remember growing up and feeling quite a big pressure to be like a boy and like boy, a boy's boy kind of thing, and feeling a bit stigmatized that I didn't really enjoy all like rugby or football or whatever. And I think that that's something that people really need to deprogram themselves from, and just allowing themselves to do what they want to do. Because I think potentially at this school, there is a bit of a, or I think in the younger years, there's a culture that's like really venerates people who are good at sports, and like that's cool, whatever. But you can also be a cool guy if you like, I don't know, like chess or something. That's so cool, and much more, you know. Yeah. So kind of, while you might be a straight white guy and you don't think that you're going to get affected by homophobia, but you are affected by gender stereotypes that might constrain you or cause you strife and prevent you from being open about struggling with your mental health or something like that. So diversity and inclusion issues really do apply to everyone. And I think that everyone needs to see that, basically.
I completely agree with you there. When you were talking about that, it reminded me of an incident that happened to me, it must have been a few years ago now, where obviously you won't see this around the college. I like to dress in quite loud clothing.
Love it. I wish I did see it around the college.
Yeah, I care too much about my image for that. but so that combined with my music background, and I'm not an especially sporty person, at least sort of not publicly. And I've had a lot of people sort of say either to my face or behind my back, you do know he's gay, right? And you know it, and for a long time I brushed that off as, oh, ha ha, funny joke.
Like, good one, mate.
But I remember a very good friend of mine, their parents said that to them, and they got really quite aggravated by it, and it was sort of, it was that moment that made me go, oh, right, yeah, this isn't just a problem for me. This is a problem that affects a lot of people mm-hmm. at once, and you know, and me being so dismissive of it
is a bit of a problem.
Yeah,
yeah,
and it makes you rethink all of those sort of all of those connotations, all of those ideas that you've
Completely.
Had before.
It's so difficult not to be dismissive sometimes of things which are hurtful, though, because often it's easier to kind of assimilate if you just kind of brush things off. I don't know. So, like, it's easy, obviously, not to call someone out if they say that's so gay than it is if they do. But it's something that I actually have come to do so often. As in, I was at this party ages ago, pre-COVID, and this guy was like, that's so gay. And then I was there, and then all my friends just look at me because they saw my face go like, you can't see it right now, obviously, but it turned red.
There was a good frowning expression.
Yes, there was a frown, and everyone just went, oh no. And it really, really annoyed me, because they shouldn't be like an oh no, and they were backed away. It should have been like, it should have been a, oh my God, Ned, I'm really sorry you had to hear that. That's not cool. Let's back you up and talk to this guy.
It's a little bit of the bystander effect.
Yeah, exactly.
As opposed to actually stepping in and going, hey, you know, that wasn't cool, even before yeah. you needed to say it.
Yeah, but they obviously knew that it wasn't okay as well. But then they made me feel as if I was some crazy homosexual who was, I don't know, whatever, you know, it was just ridiculous. Because if I was just standing up for saying, that's not right, I wasn't about to shout at this boy or whatever. I was just going to say, look, mate, I don't really think that's okay if you say that, and trying to explain why. But yeah, I think it's a bit difficult now as well, because I'm very publicly out at school, and I have no issue with talking to people about my sexuality or anything. But I feel like that means that sometimes people might tread on eggshells or not speak in their normal way around me. And it means that I don't necessarily see everything at the school in kind of its true light. Like in-house, I never hear anything, to be honest with you. And it might be as a result of me being in the house and making people aware of D&I issues and the fact that small things like little microaggressions can actually have really hurt people. Yeah, because I've heard about some from other friends in other houses that it's not the same, and that whenever you go into the third form rooms in their house, it's just, it'd be awful if you weren't straight, because you just, but I don't know, it like, it's not a nice place basically. But yeah, Wellington is great, and I think that one of the most important things people can do, or what I feel a responsibility to do, is be a good role model to people in the lower school who might be questioning their sexuality or something, because I felt like when I was younger, I didn't really see that in the upper years, and that I didn't know you could like be at the school and be okay and be gay. But I think that's what I'm trying to do at the moment, just like live my life and be myself. And yeah.
That was, we got on quite a tangent there.
I don't even, very, yeah.
I think it was a good tangent to go on though. But obviously, you know, this is a, you know, we're talking about the college here.
Yes.
And a lot of the reason that this Hidden Figures event is even taking place at all is because the college is sort of responding to things that are happening in the world. Of course, it's taking place on the 1 year anniversary of
George Floyd. Yeah.
Yeah. How do you think the college is responding to these sort of these wider events in the world?
I think well, and I think they're acknowledging that they have a responsibility to as well. I remember, especially after Sarah Everard was murdered, it was a very quick response, and I read something in assembly about it, and just trying to get people to just be sympathetic to women and hear them rather than saying, oh, shut up, women don't get sexually assaulted, because it like, yeah, basically, yeah. How well is the college responding? I think pretty well, to be honest with you. Yeah, and I think that the thing is that while, yeah, I think that perhaps it could be more self-starting, in the sense that we shouldn't have to wait for something to happen to push you in that direction of wanting to make change at the college because of things that are happening in the world. But I suppose it does then expose to you issues which exist closer to home. And I think that's something that's important for, so like the prefects and I, as well as Mr. and Mrs. Miller and the kind of adult level D&I team, in actually trying to make change that's a bit more organic without having to be pushed into it. Yeah, I'm not saying that we all have to be pushed into making change. I'm just saying that it would be great if we could be more proactive rather than reactive in terms of responding to world phenomena.
And speaking of proactivity, and obviously Hidden Figures quote unquote ended yesterday. Yeah. But of course that shouldn't be the end of the discussion and of the continued effort. So what plans does the college have moving forwards?
So the focus is at the moment, as I said earlier, is on race, but they're moving over, like they're going to do kind of a rotation thing where they focus on different things. So it might be sexuality in the next 6 months afterwards, or gender. To be honest with you, I think that I'd need to come back and give you another roundup of of the aims, because the process of aligning the student diversity and inclusion kind of prefect team and the staff one is still kind of taking place, because it's really hard to survey a college and understand actually what its problems are, but then what its weak strengths are as well. I think I can speak for the prefect body though, in that we are all very passionate about making sure that D&I is loud at the school and that everyone is kind of getting involved in it. So there are these D&I workshops that are happening with two people from each house currently, which is great. But what we're really pushing, what we're going to be pushing for the school to be doing, is engaging more people in like in active workshops, because while it's great that you have two people going from each house to go and speak to Mr. Miller, I think it's going to be a lot more effective and like wide hitting that's not a very good phrase, if everyone has to get involved. And it's obviously, I think making things compulsory isn't the best way of getting people engaged, but I think some things it is necessary, because otherwise people just don't think it affects them, or they just don't know. So yeah, one of our things is pushing workshops. I don't know how expensive that's going to be, so it's going to be some conversations with college finance about that. But yeah, that kind of thing.
And I suppose to start to wrap this up, putting all of this together, being sort of a student lead of diversity and inclusion, how have these experiences made you reflect on your own behaviour, and has it indeed made you change any of your own behaviours?
Definitely. I think what it's made me do, and the process of becoming a student leader at the school, has made me reflect a lot on my own values and thinking about whether I was living in accordance to them. And I think this is something that's really important for everyone to do, because if you don't know what matters to you, then how are you supposed to live your life in a way that adheres to that? But how has it changed my outlook? I think I've become a lot less judgmental than I was before, because I realized that D&I issues are ones that people feel a bit worried about approaching, for they fear being wrong. And I think it's really important to let people know that they can be wrong with you, because they're not actively trying to, I don't know, be rude to someone or oppress them. That's a strong word. But yeah, just being compassionate to people who are facing these issues, but also being compassionate to people who might have been perpetrators of these issues in the past, but that want to learn, because ultimately, I think we've got to be more tolerant just to move forward as a whole, really. And then also just little things like changing my use of language in terms of kind of microaggressions and that kind of things. I definitely used to remember saying "that's so gay" a lot, and I still do sometimes out of instinct, and that's really bad, but it's something that I'm working on, and it's something that I try and pick up on other people when they do. So just being really self-aware and self-conscious of kind of my own shortcomings, but then trying to improve upon that. That would be it. And I think if I had any advice to people for just being up to date with D&I, or who wanted to learn or whatever, is just like, we all have social media, so follow some pages on it, and it's quite easy to learn about. I don't know, just listen to people who are passionate about it.
Hey, you preempted my next question, so thank you for that. Because I was just about to ask, what can other people do about this? It all comes back to awareness. You know, if you make that active effort, it sort of produces a passive response that lives in you from there, and that will sort of grow the active response that you'll make afterwards. Even just making that little starting push, you know, can snowball into something so much bigger and hopefully so much more helpful for so many people.
Definitely. And it's really easy to be down on yourself sometimes about, I don't know, whatever, but I think that something that I think about is thinking about myself a year ago and how kind of aware I was about social issues and that kind of thing, and then thinking about now and how much I feel like I've become more receptive to whatever it is. It's been really great talking to you.
And I suppose to wrap this up, we've talked about sort of your behaviours and attitudes. What will you take from these experiences, I guess, I hate to use this word, but professionally? Mm-hmm. How have you found this?
I'm not always... I go from being very organised to very disorganised. And when you do stuff on college level and you're working with other people, you really have to be on your stuff. So emails have been looked at a lot more frequently than they used to be looked at, but also listening, I think, because as with all these things, it's a really collaborative effort that involves lots of people and lots of opinions, because ultimately it's about human experience, right? And that's what diversity and inclusion work is trying to improve. It's trying to make people's lives better than what they previously were on kind of a day-to-day level, but also like a structural level. So collaborative skills. And then, yeah, kind of an inclusivity, I suppose. Like on the prefect body, I call it the prefect body, but it's not really the prefect body, because especially as part of the D&I team, what we've done is we've kind of expanded it and just kind of said, hey, if anyone wants to join, please do come to the meetings with us, because we'd value as many of other people's opinions as we can get, really. Because it's great having people who are passionate about it, who are prefects, but get the third from involved and people from all around the school who face different issues, because ultimately that's the only thing that's going to really inform us about what needs to be improved on. Yeah. Quite a bad way to end that sentence.
Well, if people do want to get involved, then how can they go about doing that?
Email me. Literally email me, email Charlotte Grigg, email Anjali Darling. My email is just chapman@wellingtoncollege.org.uk, as in C-H-A-P-M-A-N. It's quite a good one, I know. Yeah, just stop me if you see me around school. I'd like to think I'm quite smiley and approachable, I hope. Yeah, just genuinely don't be afraid. Just come and say hi, or speak to Miss Sutcliffe, who is the lower sixth committee leader, who is so friendly, or speak to Mrs. Miller. I don't know if you'll know see Miss Miller around school, but genuinely just speak to any of the prefects about diversity and inclusion, or speak to your head of house or whoever, your housemaster, and I'm sure they can put you in touch, and we'd love to have a chat.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Ned. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
I hope that all of the listeners have learned something from this interview, and we hope that you can continue to take the values that we've discussed in this interview forwards in your own lives, and help to make Wellington College and the world in general a better place.
Indeed.